They sure knew how to put them together in the old country.
The old family coach. And that body was handmade.
What a fun car.
Ron and Anian. And there's how many miles on the Sienna?
About 75.
It wouldn't be the worst idea to drop the pan once.
I'm in the middle of a very big experiment.
The Car Doctor. Hey, Lou, welcome to The Car Doctor. How are you?
I have a 2016 Lexus 458 Sport.
Nice car.
I was wondering what your opinion would be as far as rust proofing or undercoating. I did talk to the Lexus dealer, and they recommended not getting it done.
And I kind of lean towards them.
If you don't stop imagining these crazy things, I'll take you to a doctor to have you examined.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now...
I want to drink your blood.
That's not at all nice to say.
I want to sip your blood.
Much better.
Here's Ronnie. Start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Let's wander around as we kind of creep along this Halloween show. This is the pre-Halloween show. The must-see movie of the week this week. All right? The must-see movie of the week this week has to be Hollywood Nights. So let's make sure we watch that, because as we all know, that was Halloween night, 1965. That was the after American Graffiti, the clone, but, still a great movie, New Bomb Turk and the gang. So that's the movie to watch this week. Let's go over to line. Let's go over and talk to Jeff, 2013 Subaru Impreza Sport. Jeff, welcome along, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Glad to talk to you.
You too, sir.
Yeah, I've got an Impreza Sport I bought used with 60,000 miles on it in January of 18.
Okay.
So I've had about 20 months. And ever since I've gotten it, well, it runs fine. I really like it. It's one of the 2.0 engines.
Right.
As opposed to the 2.5s. It seems to go through a bit of oil.
How much?
Using full, about a quart in 3,000.
Okay.
And, you know, I've just not had a car do that. You know, I know Subarus are known for blowing head gaskets. And actually, the light came on yesterday at about 2,500 miles, which would be the shortest term that I've had it go on. It went right back off, and I've only driven the car about 10 miles, so I haven't put any more in at this point. But I just didn't know if that was normal. You know, does the full synthetic make a difference? You know, I didn't know if that was a thinner oil that might burn off or...
Well, it
you know,
should.
Just kind of wanted to figure out if I had something to be concerned about with this vehicle.
Yeah, I think you do. Do you have a pencil handy? Something to write with?
Yep.
You want to get your hands on Subaru Bulletin 02-157-14R. It's been revised three or four times, probably more than that. The latest release that I'm aware of was August of 2018, and it talks about warranty extension on 13 and 14, and I believe it goes back to 11 and 12 Imprezas and Outbacks and so forth with the 2-liter dual overhead cam for excess of oil consumption. All right. And in that bulletin, and I would tell you to try and have a copy of the bulletin in front of you when you talk to Subaru so that you have full knowledge, because some of the things in that bulletin are very, very specific. For example, they talk about the fact that they consider the vehicle to have high oil consumption. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
If it burns if it burns a third of a quart in 1,200 miles. Now, you know, this is kind of like Hyundai saying, how much oil does the car take? 5.1 quarts. What? You couldn't make it 5 quarts. You couldn't make it 5.5 quarts. You got to make it 5.1 quarts.
There on some things.
You know, you wonder, you know, I have a friend, Chris, who's a national trainer for Automotive Training Group, and we talk about it and laugh about it all the time. One of Chris's favorite sayings is, you have to wonder what these engineers are saying. You know, do they design it in the morning, go out and have lunch, have one too many, and then come back and approve something completely against what they designed in the morning? Because there's no common sense. You know, common sense is not common. And a third of a quart in 1,200 miles is now Subaru's benchmark. If it's burning that's excessive. And that would probably meet your need because, you know, a third of a quart every 1,200 miles, high school math, not that I'm all that smart, is going to tell me that that's a quart of oil in 3,600 miles. So you're doing a quart of oil in 3,000 miles. So you kind of meet that demand. And what they're doing is Subaru has extended the warranty on these vehicles 8 years, 100,000 miles. They've okay. increased the coverage. So I would tell you to get your hands on that. And I
you
just want
that bulletin one more time.
Sure. The bulletin number is easy. It's 02-157-14R. And there might be later releases. The last revision I remember reading was August of 2018.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, be prepared. All right. You know, you know, Jeff, be prepared to be disappointed, because my experience from the people I've spoken with, that they go through this procedure with Subaru and they have the repair done and they still have a vehicle that has oil consumption. So I'm not convinced that they're able to fix it. I'm not convinced yet. I haven't heard enough positive. I still hear more negative than positive about the oil consumption problem. And I agree with you. Oil consumption a quart in 3,000 miles is just too much. I see worse than that. I've seen some of these cars really chew up oil because they have ring issues.
So I guess my next question is: if I keep the oil up, am I going to be okay with the car, or should I be?
Well, let's and it's a fair question. So the car burns oil. If this was 1963. And there was oil burning out the tailpipe, it's not hurt anything but the environment. But it's not. So this is model year, this is year 2019, model year 2013. All right. And new cars have catalytic converters and oxygen sensors or air fuel sensors in them. So that oil going out the exhaust is now contaminating sensors that are in the exhaust system for emission controls, as well as coating the catalytic converter. At some point, you know, catalytic converters get insulated enough. They're kind of like going to see your relatives for the holidays. You're insulated, so you're immune to anything they say. Well, the catalytic converter gets insulated. It's going to be immune from any oxygen storage capability, and it's not going to function right. And pretty soon you're going to set a fault code for cat inefficiency, and then you've got to deal with that whole drama.
Gotcha.
All right. So
I mean, otherwise, I'm very satisfied with the vehicle. You know, it gets like 35 miles to a gallon on on an easy highway type trip.
But sure. Yeah, it's just
four wheel drive gets you through the winter and all that. But
yeah,
all wheel drive. Yeah.
It's just a small flaw in that they don't have a good engine in it. And I get it, right?
It's just a small thing. Yeah.
Yeah, small problem. It's kind of like it needs open heart surgery, but other than that, it runs great. What a wonderful car. And the headlights probably work good, and the taillights work good, and the doors open and close, and all the locks function. Hey, I'm thrilled. You know, it's. I know I've got to tell you, I still think, you know, I still believe that the majority of engine issues today come about from the lack of oil changes. I'm sorry. I just, you know, we've spent all this time and effort and money and campaigning and media releases that talk about extending the length of an oil change interval. And we don't seem to be talking about the fact that better than probably five or six car companies off the top of my head I can think of have oil consumption issues, all with extended oil drain intervals. And they're all coming back to the rings are getting gummy and varnished up. And that's what's creating the consumption. You know,
they put a sticker on this at the VIP place for $5,000. And I actually asked them the last time, I said, please put $3,500 on it.
Right. Now, is that conventional? Is that conventional or synthetic?
No, it's full synthetic, 0-20.
Okay. Right. Okay.
And so it's a little more expensive, but I still think it's cheap insurance. You know, I do probably $15,000 a year. So
you bought this car used, right?
You know. Yeah.
So you don't see, and the problem is you don't know what the life was like on it for the first 60,000 miles.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Cars are like kids. I say it all the time. Cars are like kids. How they're raised and how they're brought up. By the time they hit their teenage years, you know which kid is going to make it and which kid is going to, you know, end up on a scene of Blue Bloods. With Frank Reagan and company chasing them down. And then, you know, cars are like kids in that when they're young, they'll take a little bit of abuse. How they withstand that abuse when they're older remains to be seen, and it's the value of the car company. And Subaru doesn't seem to be all they're cracked up to be in some senses of the word. They've got their issues, as well as other companies. You know, listen, it's not just Subaru. Toyota's got problems. Honda's got problems. Hyundai, Kia, they've all got engine issues. And I don't understand. GM, Chevrolets have got some issues with timing chains, 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, Equinoxes, you know, and all the like, the four-cylinder overhead cam motors. And I don't understand. What I don't understand is how we went from being a country that could make an engine last, you know, 200,000 miles to the junk we're making today. And, you know, it's even though some of these car companies aren't here in the States, Hyundai, Kia, Toyota, obviously, but still they're selling it here, they're marketing it here, and we allow it. And that's the problem. That's lowering our standards. So, Jeff, good luck to you. You need any more information, you know where to find me. And I'll do all I can for you.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
You're very welcome, sir. Good luck to you. Yeah, sad state of affairs. You just, you know, it's we're just being sold junk sometimes, I think. And we accept it. And that's the bad part. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this.
For the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Christopher in Illinois, 044 Excursion. Christopher, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you, sir. You're welcome.
The reason I was calling today is I've got a 2004 Ford Excursion. It's actually the third Excursion that I've owned, so I'm somewhat familiar with how they are supposed to drive. I bought this one about a year ago. It came from out west, and when I got it, I noticed that it had very hard steering. It didn't want to return to center. When you let go of the wheel, it wandered and darted real bad.
Okay.
The reason I bought this vehicle was it was, for its age, it was very low mileage. It had about 68,000 miles on it, I think, when I bought it.
Okay.
And I think it must have sat a lot. So the first thing I did was I thought maybe the ball joints, since I jacked it up in the air. You couldn't hardly move the wheels with weight off of them, so I had somebody put ball joints in it. And I had them also put the dual steering stabilizers on it because I thought maybe that would help with the darting and wandering, but that didn't really help. So then I had them put a track bar, a new tie rod ends, hubs, axle seals, steering gearbox. Still didn't help. And then I had it aligned again. And they said it was spot on because I was thinking maybe it had some kind of a tweak from being in a wreck. And I did a Carfax that hadn't been wrecked.
Right.
Got a second opinion from another mechanic, and he said that that it still needed ball joints. So he put more ball joints in it and realigned it. Still didn't help. He thought that I could try to change the caster adjustment shims in the front end to see if he could get it to return to center better. I think he changed it like 2 degrees. That didn't really help at all either.
Right.
I guess I was just wanting to see if you had any ideas of things I could try.
Yeah. Well, and just so Excursions, just, and I just want to say this just so I said it. I don't think this is your problem, but I just want to get you thinking on the other end. Just make sure the back of the truck is okay. Track bars, coil springs, nothing's broken, no bushings are pushed out in the rear axle or suspension, just because we don't know the history of the vehicle and the vehicle sat a lot. I have seen a few cases where problems in the rear end and how the rear end lines up, although you would think they would pick that up in a four-wheel alignment, but I've learned in looking at cars from other shops that I never assumed the last mechanic knew what he was doing. I don't like to say that or think that. I don't like to think badly of my industry, but it does happen, and I've got to be a realist. So just, you know, anything askew in the rear. When we're looking at the front, all right, I want to know, does the and you sort of have to do this on a drive-on lift, all right? Putting it up in the air doesn't really tell you a lot. Pay particular attention to the front control arm bushings where they meet the frame. Are they pushed out, distorted? Is there any looseness there? If we were to put a, if we were on a drive-on rack and we were to put a ram jack under the end of the control arm and then try to wiggle that control arm or look at it for looseness, does anything jerk and move? I've seen a few cases where those, where the inner hinge, where the control arm actually pivots, gets good and rusted or loose, and it will cause all sorts of handling issues. Not necessarily wheel return, but definitely darting and sloppy steering, and you're like, you're always correcting the steering and things like that. I've had that experience. Last thing on my head, and I just want to mention the ball joint thing. You know, there's a lot of ball joints on the market, and listen, Moog is not one of our sponsors by any stretch of the imagination. I like Moog suspension. I like Moog ball joints, all right? I think they make a great product. I see a lot of ball joints out there from a lot of other manufacturers. There's a couple of brands out there. I forget their the product name, but it's that light blue boot. It's a light blue boot made offshore. They're being pushed into the marketplace. They're cheap. They're plentiful, and a lot of people use them. I don't see them holding up to save their life, and I just see a lot of issues with them. So I tend to stay away from them. So there's that. Where I want somebody to look is, does this vehicle have a steering coupling, which is just before the steering box? This is a box vehicle, right, not a rack?
Correct.
Does this have the U-joint coupling before the box?
Because yes, I believe so.
Has that been checked? And if so, how did they check it? Because what you're describing is a rusted or tight U-joint coupling, steering coupling. I mean, to the T. And if I'm not mistaken, this is going to be the style Ford coupling that was two U-joints laid in tandem over the top of each other so that they can expand in and out, so that they can flex with the vehicle as it travels down the road and the suspension as it goes up and down. And if this vehicle sits a lot, that joint's going to be tight. And, you know, if you want to try a science experiment, it's a little sloppy. But what you could do is, it, without even taking it to a mechanic, get a can of Rust Buster, some kind of rust penetrant. You got a local O'Reilly Auto Parts?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Get out to O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go in there and get a can of PB Blaster. You ever use PB Blaster?
Oh yeah. Use it all the time.
Right. So get a can of PB Blaster. You'll see that coupling. It might be covered under a plastic cover, but you'll see that coupling if it has it. Get some shop rags on the ground or a drip pan, and just spray that joint. Coat it a couple of times. Let it soak. Let it sit. Come back to it a little bit later. You know, let it sit overnight. Just soak it. Let that PB work its way in. Take the truck out for a ride. If there's any change in the way that vehicle operates, that coupling is binding. And you're going to find that, you know, changing it will fix it. So get a look at that. We can go from there. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. You know, I still can't get over this Paul Eisenstein article from last month. I'm still reading it, about how some states are charging extra for drivers who buy electric vehicles. Colorado and Wyoming, $50 a year. California, $100. And Illinois is trying to introduce a flat fee of $1,000 for owners of electric vehicles. Boy, it sure pays to follow the rules sometimes, huh? Yay, let's save the environment. And I'm not saying I'm not for that, but just like, you know, you buy in. Sometimes you buy into the program, and the program bites you back. I don't get it. Let's get on over and talk to. Let's go talk to Sam in Illinois. We haven't talked to Illinois in a while. Sam, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Ron, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
I have a 2011 Toyota Avalon, and it's got 60,000 miles on it. And exactly at 38, 39 miles per hour speed, I get a shudder. I get like a vibration, and as soon as I go over 40, it goes away.
Okay.
I've been reading a lot of blogs on Toyota forums, and everybody keeps talking about tires in it, but some people it happens to them at 60 miles an hour, but like these original tires too, so I've never had any problem with the tires, no, you know, original owner of this thing, so I don't know where to go.
Okay.
What to look for.
Well, how old are you, Sam?
I am 58.
Do you feel as good at 58 as you did at 8?
Well, it changed at 27.
Okay.
I started changing at 27.
Well, right. Yeah,
I still feel good, right. But exercise, you know, I'm still good.
Yeah,
I'm maintaining. Let me just say the word maintenance. I think you're going to put that in there.
You know, you get where I'm going. You know, listen, I only started doing CrossFit 2 years ago. It still hasn't killed me, but they're trying. So,
okay.
You know, are these the original tires at 60?
Yes.
And, you know, how much tread is left on them? And
well, they're good. They're still good.
And then what can't you see? Do we have a belt issue? Do we have an internal structure issue of the tire? But neither here nor there. Has anybody tried to diagnose this? Has anybody moved the tires around? Has anybody done?
I was going to do that myself, you know, because everybody talks about is tires. And
right.
I didn't know if there was other, you know, the tie rods or some bushing down there that, you know, attached to that area. I didn't know if that had anything, you know, that 60,000. I didn't know if that was.
Nah, not for what you're describing. For what you're describing, you're talking about a speed related. You know,
and it's exactly
at that speed.
The other thing somebody was talking about was doing a balance on a, I don't know what it's called, but they said when the car's on the tire, I mean, when the tires are on the car, you balance them that way. And I forget the term they use. Don't take it off, but go somewhere who's got a tire balancer on the car.
I think you're talking about in the old days we used to call that dynamic speed balancing. And
balancer, yeah, right.
Right. I don't know that you need to go to that level. I like, you know, when I start talking about tire and wheel service, I like the stuff from Hunter.
Yeah.
We use Hunter in the shop all day long. The tire machine is great.
Okay.
The balancers are great. Their aligners are great. They're very well thought out. They're an American company,
right.
Not that that means anything, but it's, you know, American ingenuity. Their stuff works.
Right, right.
So,
sure.
You know, and sometimes I lean on my balancer. I've got the, I forget what model, I just bought it. I've got the Hunter Model 1 down from the Road Force machine because I tend not to see.
Yeah.
To me, the Road Force is very applicable on certain models of tires, low profile, the high-end Beamers and things. We don't see a lot of those. We've got the one model down from that, but I tend to lean on my balancer quite a bit. It's got laser weight placement. It's very precise, and I can do a lot of things with weights and where I want to put them. So it's important.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind that a balance does more than just balance the tire. You know, it's also an opportunity for a shop to look and see, is the rim bent? I can balance a bent rim. I could compensate for a bent rim, but I can only compensate so much in terms of how, you know, vibration, and I can't compensate if the rim is still bent, and if the rim has some peculiarity to it or trait that at 38 miles an hour, it's going to make the car vibrate. And I'm not saying you do or don't. I'm just saying, you know, when we're balancing, I always teach my guys, hey, we're balancing. We're spinning the tire. We've got the tire off the car. Let's look around. Let's be nosy neighbors. Let's go look at front end. Let's go look for something worn. Let's go look for rust stains coming out of a bolt socket. That means it's water got in there and something's bound up and not moving like it's supposed to. Let's go, you know, let's use our eyes and ears. Let's do what God gave us and use what God gave us. So balancing is a good place to go. Moving tires is a good place to go, front to back. If we move tires front to back and it changes the shake at all, you know, I'm all for it. It's keep in mind too, and I can tell you some stupid stories. People have come to me with shakes, and we'll go to work on the car, and the lug nuts are loose. You know, one wheel's got this happened a month ago. We're like, what happened? Well, we went down to the tire store down the road, and they did a rotation for us, and we kept going back, and they could never figure out what was wrong with it. And literally, we tightened the lug nuts and solved the problem. Right. That's out there. The longer I work on cars, go ahead.
I've checked all the lug nuts. I maintain it pretty good. The minimum stuff, not the major stuff.
But I think long story short, you're talking more about rotation, balance. When it's on the balancer, how much hop do the tires have? How much I think of it as concentricity of out of line, up and down. Blah, 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 blah. You know, how much motion up and down does it have?
Right.
Are the tires egged on the wheels? Have they taken a wear? Do we have a belt shift? There's five or six things that can go wrong with tires as they age, and we've got to make it feel like it's 27.
This is right at 60 grand.
Yeah, it's But before we randomly replace tires, let's start doing some diagnosing.
Yeah. Can I throw another one at you?
Sure, real quick.
It's an 03 Camry. The heating does not work. I changed the thermostat, and the next thing I was going to do is there's a servo on the passenger side which controls the door. It's called a servo door. I can't remember the term. And I thought maybe that would be something.
Okay.
Again, it's a one-owner car. No.
So
it's just heat. You get heat. It's not overheating. Temperature stays right where it's at.
All right. Simple.
The thermostat has been replaced. The thermostat wasn't bad either.
Simple questions here. Check engine light on.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Good. So it's not setting any sort of fault code for thermostat operation. And, always a fair question. Sometimes the check engine light's on. Nobody thinks that they would have anything to do with temperature.
Right.
So the vehicle comes up to operating temperature. Temperature gauge says it's hot. If you were to lift the hood and grab the radiator hose, is it uncomfortable to the touch?
No.
It's not hot?
No.
Do you have a scan tool?
I'm just reading about this stuff, and that's pointing to me at that door, the servo door on the passenger side is where I'm at now. So.
Right. Well, I just want to verify that the engine does have enough temperature. So what I want to know is...
I checked...
Go ahead.
I said I checked the water, the coolant level, and everything is up to par.
Okay. But hear me out, Sam. And I'm not saying it's not the actuator. I'm just saying that I'd like to just know, there's some basics here. If you were at the doctor, heart rate, blood pressure, how good are you doing? That kind of stuff. I just want to cover the basics. Coolant level, surely there. Thermostat's there. What's engine temperature? Thermostat could be the best thermostat in the world. Like, I can give you a half a dozen reasons why engine temperature doesn't come up to speed. What does the computer see? Is it 185 and it's supposed to be 198? Is it just right on the ragged edge of where it'll set a fault code but doesn't? So if that vehicle's been driven for 20 minutes and it's 65 degrees out, you grab that upper radiator hose, that should be sort of uncomfortable, warm to the touch. Stats open, cool, and circulating. It should be. And if you have any doubts, if it's warm enough, a scan tool, OBD2 way, would tell you, hey, it's up to temp. This is what it's running at. Once we get past that, grab the heater hoses. Inlet and outlet, one should be hotter than the other. And if they're not, if one's hot and the other one is cold, maybe we've got a restriction at the core and the core needs to be back flushed. And then maybe we could talk about water valves, being restricted, not allowing proper flow. So just having the numbers sometimes beforehand is just gives you a lot of information. Give me a call back if you need more, Sam. I appreciate it. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, rolling along here this hour. Thanks for joining us. At 855-560-9900. Don't forget to get out the Car Doctor Facebook page. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Check out what's going on there as we continue to try and fix all of America's broken cars. Roman, Lincoln Park, New Jersey. How are you today, sir? How can I help?
Okay, how you doing?
Good, sir. What's going on?
I got a 2001 Acura TL with a 3.2 V6, 192,000 miles.
Okay.
It basically when I'm driving, let's say I'm going 30 miles an hour, 40, and I accelerate, it kind of jerks the car to the left, but it doesn't continue pulling to the left. It seems like the alignment's okay. It just will actually jerk the steering wheel to the left. I could feel it. If I let it go, I could actually see it. And then it goes straight again. And then when I hit the brakes, it actually goes the other way, to the right.
I would focus on the brake issue first.
I replaced the brakes, and the brakes are wearing beautiful, and the rotors and everything, and it seems like the brakes are totally fine.
Okay.
Because the car
pulls to the, which way does the car pull, to the right?
It only jerks just for a second as soon as you apply it, and then it starts going straight.
When you say it jerks, does the steering wheel change position, or does the...
A tiny bit. It will just like kick a tiny bit to the right or to the left. When I accelerate, it kicks to the left.
Okay. Is the steering rack tight?
I don't know.
It sounds like the steering mechanism is loose.
Could it be tightened, or if it's loose, sure.
What you're describing under acceleration to a degree sounds like something we used to call torque steer, because front wheel drive vehicles have unequal length front drive axles. It would favor one side over the other, and sometimes it would put more load on an axle, and the axle would get internally gouged up and beaten up, and it would create a massive torque steer issue. But in this case, where I would go is I would pay very careful attention to engine mounts, trans mount. If you power brake this car, does the front mount hold up okay? Have you tried that?
Well,
have you looked at that?
I replaced the front mount, the big one in the front.
Right.
I replaced the one on the main one on the side that holds the top of the engine.
Were they bad?
I did not. They were bad.
Okay, right.
But that didn't change. The only one I didn't replace is the one in the back of the engine, the big one in the back.
Well, is it, you know, if it's not bad, I'm not saying you have to. There's ways to test it.
I don't know how to tell if it's bad.
Well, if you put the car in reverse and power brake it in reverse, does it lift the back of the motor up? Does it lift the back of the mount up?
I didn't try reverse. Okay, I'm going to try that.
You know, it's try it in reverse, try it in drive. Does it look like the mounts are, you know...
In drive, it doesn't do anything bad.
Okay.
I didn't try it in reverse.
Try it in reverse, and you might have to have somebody watch while you're doing it. So
yeah,
that's,
I know.
And then we get into, do we have an issue with the rack? Is the rack itself, the steering rack itself, shifting and, you know, under acceleration, jerking the wheel? Because is the car actually shifting, or is it just that the steering wheel is shifting from the application of load? So do those things, and give me a call back, and obviously just pay attention on what kind of shape are the drive axles in. And even though the brakes were wearing evenly, could you still have a caliper that's binding? It might be an interesting car if you have access to a thermal imager. I know it's a little high-tech, but a thermal imager to look at, take it for a ride, bring it back real quick, jump out, take a thermal image of, or temperature heat gun of the brake rotors. Are they equal? Are they within 20 degrees side to side? Is one side dragging more than the other? Sometimes you'll see a lot doing it that way. Anyway, appreciate the call, Roman. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back to wrap it up right after this.
Here I come in my 57.
Welcome back. Ron Neen, the Car Doctor. You know, I want to just talk real quick about some of the things that, well, it goes on here and goes on in the shop in terms of the phone calls and the questions I answer. There's got to be a deductive line of reasoning. Just because the brakes pull to the right doesn't mean the fault's in the brakes. Just because the check engine light comes on and it's got a fault in the knock sensor circuit of an internal module doesn't mean the fault's in that module. Auto repair is a layered issue today, and it has been for some time. It can't just be because the check engine light says this, we automatically do that. You know, following a flow chart, the only time I know a flow chart works is if you're trying to walk from one end of the block to the other, left foot, right foot, you know? And I always think about, would a flow chart include look out for the puddle, look out for the hole in the road. Would it include, don't step here, the dog was just there? You know, does it give you the options? All right. And I think a lot of that with auto repair. We had more than a few calls this week. I had a body shop call me this week, and Tim's under the gun. He's trying to get a car out, and he said, you know, my scan tool doesn't communicate with the car. And I, you know, listen, did you, and I could tell he was not in panic, but he was upset. It's quarter to five. He's got to get rid of the car. You know, did you check the fuse for port 16? Did you check to see, did you try the scan tool on another car? Did you go through some basic diagnostics? And he did, and I think he ended up solving it. And the point becomes that, you know, even when you're under the gun, in the words of the great Lou Holtz, you got to think win. What's important now? That's what diagnosing cars is all about. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.